Case number 20-2032, Deanna Johnson versus Ford Motor Company. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Lofbaum for the appellant.
Thank you. This case involves severe sexual harassment at the Ford Dearborn truck plant. Much of the sexual harassment also contains a racial component, and it is the racial harassment piece that is at issue in this appeal. Given the facts in this case, the district court's finding that Ms. Johnson's race claims did not survive summary judgment is truly an aberration. It is wholly at odds with longstanding Sixth Circuit precedent, controlling Sixth Circuit law, and virtually all the case law. The lower court did acknowledge that Ms. Johnson's hostile work environment race claim was based on continuous, ongoing, daily racial comments directed at her, but it still found as a matter of law that the harassment was not severe or pervasive enough to be actionable. Just briefly, Ms. Johnson is an African-American woman. Her harasser is a white male, Mr. Rowan. They were peers. They were both production supervisors at the plant who trained Ms. Johnson, who was new to the job, and report on her progress. So the racial comments that Mr. Rowan directed at Ms. Johnson daily and continuously included constant requests to see her breasts, asking for pictures of her breasts, specifically, show me those brown mounds, brown mountains. Sometimes it was black mounds, or chocolate mounds. So at least six variations of wanting to see her black breasts. This was daily. Mr. Rowan also repeatedly told Ms. Johnson he did not yet have any black ones or black women in his collection and needed Ms. Johnson in his collection. He also constantly referred to Ms. Johnson as spicy chocolate and equating her with candy. He called her a chocolate Jolly Rancher, and he explained to her that what he meant was she was candy he wanted to lick and suck on. This individual could make anything perverted. He was eating a Mounds candy bar at one point and texted Ms. Johnson, not exactly the black Mounds I wanted to feast my eyes upon. So this occurred daily. It was ongoing and continuous for the 4 months that these two worked together. So we're talking about dozens and dozens of racial sexual comments over a condensed period of time. The trial court said this wasn't pervasive enough and cited cases where there were literally one or two sporadic or isolated comments as opposed to the dozens and dozens that exist in this case.
If I could ask a question, I had the sense that maybe the district judge was focusing on her deposition testimony, where she mostly, I'm stating what I think the district judge thought, mostly was talking about the sexual comments, as opposed to her saying it was daily racial comments. Could you address that issue?
Yes. So the daily comments, that's right in our complaint, that the comments about the brown mountains was a daily thing. But I think one thing the lower court maybe missed is that we don't have distinct race harassment and sexual harassment. It's all sexual harassment. And a lot of it is also racial as well. So when she's asked about sex harassment, she wasn't asked specifically about racial harassment per se, or very, very minimally, but it is in the record. I did cite to her deposition testimony where she said this was constant. These comments about her breasts were constant.
But you, the way you phrased it, her comments about her breasts, his comments about her breasts, if it was in terms of white breasts, that would be one thing that wouldn't support your claim of racial hostile environment.
Right. But in our complaint, we specifically alleged the comments about the black, brown, chocolate, et cetera, mountains were daily, every single day.
So yeah, but you referred to your complaint twice now, but don't you need to have evidentiary material in a summary judgment opposition?
I also cited her deposition testimony that she said, brown mountains, brown jugs, whatever he wanted to call them that day. So yes, it is in the deposition transcript as well. So there's literally not a single case that I have found, or Ford has pointed out, that when you have an ongoing, constant, daily barrage of comments like this, it is not bad enough to be to meet the pervasive test. And pervasive is really, it's a common sense principle that the more frequent the harassment, as opposed to being sporadic or isolated, the more likely it is to be pervasive.
Counselor, let me ask you about, tell us what's in the record to show that that race component was, that she made her supervisors aware of the race component as well.
Yes, thank you. So just to give you the reporting structure, my client answered to Mahoney. Mahoney answered to Markovic, and above Markovic was Clemens. My client told Mahoney everything. She showed him the, you know, nasty texts. She discussed all the claims with him. Mahoney also shared with her that he told Markovic everything. When my client ended up going to Clemens in November, because her immediate supervisors weren't giving her any help, she ended up going to Clemens and HR. She also told Clemens, listen, I've discussed all this with Mahoney and or Markovic, and it's fallen on deaf ears, and that's why I'm here. So hopefully that answers your question. I have cited three Sixth Circuit cases, Albeda, Armstrong, Hawkins. These all involve this court reversing summary judgment for an employer based on this pervasive factor. And in Wyatt and Nissan, not quite 2 weeks ago, this court issued an opinion which confirms the same principle, that if harassment is continuous, as opposed to a few isolated sporadic incidents, the claim gets to a jury. Judge Moore, you might recall you were on that panel. I think you delivered that opinion, and Judge Stranch, you also joined it. Just a couple other points about the lower court ruling. So on a hostile work environment claim, the harassment has to be both objectively abusive and subjectively hostile. The trial court agreed that her work environment was subjectively hostile, but then claimed it wasn't pervasive enough, so it wasn't subjectively hostile.
Is the argument that that argument was not made, or that the record doesn't include that evidence?
Oh, you know, the court actually pointed out at the summary judgment hearing that, you know, he appreciated the briefs and they were good and they were thorough. It's not a matter of arguments not being made. And it didn't explain why he parsed out the evidence saying, yes, it was subjectively hostile, but not objectively hostile. The objective piece, of course, goes to this whole pervasive issue that we're talking about. The district court also viewed other facts in a Ford favorable way, contrary to SJ standards. For instance, in dismissing the race claim, the court cited to the fact that when Ford HR did its investigation, which was at the 11th hour, my client's supervisors never talked about or were never asked about racial harassment, and that Mr. Mahoney never admitted that the plaintiff told him about racially charged comments. So the implication is, if Ford's HR doesn't elicit that or admit that there were racial comments, then that confirms it didn't happen. And that is just really contrary to summary judgment standards. As far as notice and prompt remedial action, I think Judge Stranch, you touched on this. The trial court didn't get to that issue, but because the law, as far as what constitutes pervasive harassment, is so overwhelmingly against what Ford is claiming, they want the court to just ignore that law and affirm summary judgment on the alternative basis that, as a matter of law, Ford took action as soon as it had notice.
When did your client first notify Mahoney?
August.
And did she notify him of the racial component?
She told him everything. Yes, Judge. And in Wyatt, a couple of weeks ago, this court said a 3-week delay in investigating an explicit and specific sexual harassment complaint suffices to defeat summary judgment and send the question of whether Nissan acted with reasonable care for resolution by a fact finder. So Ms. Johnson reported the sexual harassment, much of which was racially charged, beginning in August, to her supervisors, who were a proper reporting entity according to Ford's own policies and HR testimony. Nothing was done until late November when Ms. Johnson reported the harassment to a higher level supervisor and HR. So obviously much longer than the 3-week delay that the Wyatt court said was unacceptable. This is a 3-month delay. Also on the notice piece, this court reaffirmed under our circuit's case law, an employer is deemed to have notice of harassment reported to any supervisor who has been authorized to receive and respond to or forward such complaints to management. That's exactly what happened here.
Didn't Markovich text Johnson in the middle of September to write down everything he did and we'll handle it tomorrow?
Yes, he did. And she also showed him, I mean, this is not related, she had showed him some of the nasty text as well. And by that point, my client testified she had lost all faith in Mark Mahoney and Markovich that they were going to assist her. So she didn't end up doing that. But the trial court also acknowledged that Ms. Johnson testified she began reporting the harassment to Mahoney in August, and eventually she was going to him daily about Mr. Rowan's sick conduct. So the bottom line is summary judgment standards don't permit dismissal of the race claim on that alternative basis either, that Ford took prompt remedial action. With respect to the trial court striking paragraphs of my declaration, I'm going to rely on my brief and the Arrell case, which I have cited, but in short, we just supplemented the prior record, and there was no reason to strike any of that legitimate declaration testimony, which is entirely appropriate, if not expected, pursuant to Rule 26. There was no contradiction. It was already in the record, specifically with respect to the paragraph 20 that was struck, that Ms. Johnson told Mahoney everything. She said that in her depth, so the declaration was complimentary and not at all inconsistent. And in fact, the other paragraphs that were stricken were consistent with what Ford's own agents have said, which I've briefed.
You know, with regard to paragraph 20, purportedly the district court struck that because it viewed it as an attempt to create a sham issue of fact. Do you know what the district court was talking about there?
You know, honestly, I don't, Your Honor. I think it misapplied the case law from Arrell because there was no attempt to create a fact. I've never in 30 years been accused of, you know, improperly submitting an affidavit and trying to create an issue of fact. What she said was entirely consistent with her deposition. All she did was confirm that she told Mahoney about the nasty texts, pictures, and comments from Rowan and showed him most of the texts and pictures, and including those that were race-related, wanting to see her Black Mounds, Black Mountains, Chocolate Jolly Rancher, need a Black woman in my collection. She was just saying that, yes, I reported everything to Mahoney, and it included the racial piece.
Thank you. Ms. Douglas.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Stephanie Douglas on behalf of Ford Motor Company. I think the best place
look,
to-
Can I ask you something starting out here? Regarding these allegations of Mr. Rowan, the alleged mistreatment of the plaintiff here, did Ford ever take any disciplinary action against him for engaging in the behavior or making the alleged comments?
Yes, Your Honor. Ford suspended him the day after she reported it to HR, the day after she reported it to Ms. Clemens, within one business day, in fact, and then terminated him based on violation of company policy.
Thank you.
I believe the best place to start is at the end of this case, and literally at the end of plaintiff's reply brief on appeal, is the first time in this case that she makes an argument that Ford was notified of a race-based harassment and failed to act. That obviously comes too late under this court's binding precedent, including most recently the Keene Group case that Judge Clay issued May 20th, where he says that in a reply brief, the plaintiff there argued, made an argument that was presented too late and was too underdeveloped. So plaintiff...
Counsel, for development of that, looking at the affidavit where paragraph 20 was struck, and so were, I think, paragraphs 5, 9, and 11, but paragraph 19 was not struck, and it's the Mounds Candy Bar information piece that said that these are not exactly the black Mounds I wanted to feast my eyes upon and continue to demand to see my black or brown or chocolate Mounds or black or brown or chocolate Mountains. So that was not struck. That is evidentiary testimony in the case.
It is, Your Honor. It does not go to notice and failure to act, however. It does not say that she informed Ford or a supervisor of that conduct. And if you look at her reply brief, which is, again, the first place she makes an argument for when she reported it and that Ford failed to act, all of the evidence that she cites on page 9 and 10 of her reply brief relates to sexual misconduct. She alleges that Johnson testified to conversations where she told the supervisors of Mr. Rowan's sexual comments. She says that she informed Mr. Mahoney and Markovich about his behavior, including asking to see her breasts. And their other two examples also go to sex, that she reported sexual assault to Mr. Mahoney and that she reported to Ms. Clemens that her complaints had fallen on deaf ears. The record supports this characterization that all of the evidence that she cited about reports was in the context of sexual harassment. She was asked, Judge Drain indicated that she was asked at least 5 times open-ended questions about what she reported to her supervisors. I count more like 20. On pages 1209 through 1211, there's a series of questions to Ms. Johnson. What did you say to LaDawn? What did you tell her you told Rich and Billy? What did you tell her? What did you tell her? What specifically you told Mahoney? Did you tell her? What did you tell her you had told Mahoney? What specifically did you tell her? Did you tell her anything else? Did you identify the topics of the text? And it goes on and on, and all of them are sexual. The reports to Mahoney.
Counsel, what are we to make of the fact you say they're all sexual? That may be the label that was attached to the complaints, but if the factual description offered by the plaintiff as to what transpired included sexual and racial complaints, both with these sexual and racial misbehavior being intertwined, why would we characterize that as only a sex-based complaint?
Your Honor, the sex-based claims survive. They survive in state court. Those are proceeding in state court. So her ability to say that she reported sexual harassment and Ford failed to act lives on in a different case. The question in this case is whether she put Ford on notice of race-based harassment sufficient to alter her terms of employment. And that, I think the record has, there is no record on it, and there was no argument made on that element in the trial court at all. Not in the opposition to the motion for summary, not in the motion for reconsideration. Judge Drain found that she had provided no argument, that she had provided only paragraph 20, which has been stricken as far as evidence. And that in seeking reconsideration of that ruling, she didn't explain how, even if she got paragraph 20 back in, it would change the outcome of this case. And Ford argued that it wouldn't because she still had made no argument that she reported racial conduct high enough to meet the objective standard.
Yes, well, I know what the district court said, but if the actual substance of the complaint was as race-based as it was sexual discrimination-based, it's difficult to say that Ford wasn't put on notice by her that she was having a sex and race problem altogether based upon her description of what had actually transpired. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would not agree that there is any evidence that she put Ford on notice of a racial aspect of her complaint, especially an objectively hostile racial aspect as opposed to an objectively hostile sexual aspect. I would not agree that there is any evidence that she put Ford on notice of a racial-based objective hostile environment until at all. And the first time she mentioned, the first time there's any evidence that she mentioned any racial aspect at all is in the Harris interview. And Nick Rowan, what she actually says is she was being interviewed by Harris. He was asking her about sexual harassment, and the sexual harassment, he became so disturbed by her discussion of sexual harassment that he stopped the interview, called Rowan in, and Rowan was released immediately. I believe there is no evidence in the record, especially if paragraph 20 remains out, that says she reported race-based aspects of any conduct to anyone before her discussion with Mr. Harris.
What about her testimony that Rowan's request that she show him her black mounds, she testified, was a running joke within the plant?
I again, don't believe that she ever informed anyone that the race-based aspect of her experience was something that Ford needed to address.
Remind me what record 55-3 is. I have the citation, and that is not the affidavit, as I understand it, because that's 55-4.
No, it's her deposition.
Well, her deposition says that she had told Mahoney and Markovich about everything, and that in that deposition, she says that his request for her to show her black mounds, keying on the candy awful statements, was a running joke within the entire plant.
How could
her supervisors not know it was racial if the plant together is laughing about showing black mounds?
Your Honor, I have to be honest with you. The plaintiff has never cited that testimony as the basis for her allegation that Ford was on notice and failed to act. And again, I think when she cites that she reported everything to Mahoney, it's in the context of she reported sexual harassment. I think the record shows both that her belief about what was happening was sexual harassment and that what she reported was sexual harassment. It continues throughout. It's everything about Harris's investigation suggests it was sexual harassment. Everything about Clemens's interviews suggests it was sexual harassment. Everything about the interview.
Here's my struggle with that. Sexual harassment often has to do with marginalized people because they're women. In this particular case, we have two classes of marginalization. It's because of her race and because she's a woman. And in that circumstance, isn't that in fact what the law is directed to recognize that there are problems with being the recipient of that kind of behavior, which in her case is doubly problematic because she's in two classes that invite, and some of our law even suggests, invite that kind of treatment.
Your Honor, I understand your statement, and I do believe that the sexual harassment complaints she made are still viable, and she is pursuing them in state court. And I think that there are cases, including the Ellsworth case that Ms. Johnson cited, that says that case actually granted motion for summary on the race-based claim and permitted the sex-based claim to go forward and said that the racial aspects can inform her sex claim, but the racial aspects alone didn't rise to the level of objectively hostile environment. And I think here there's two problems, right? The race-based aspects don't rise to the objective level. And the evidence of that is There's no allegation that anyone else in the plant ever used any racial statements. She says so herself. There's no allegation.
Of the Mounds candy bar, then, that everyone in the plant is laughing about.
I'm a little at a disadvantage to argue that, because that is has never been cited in any of the briefs as a basis to say that there was notice to Ford of the racial aspect of the harassment. But again, I think that what happens here is her complaints were always, I want to move away from him because he's asking me for photos, because he's making sexual propositions to me, or because he touched me, right? And those things are all made in the context of her sexual harassment claim. When plaintiff's counsel questioned all the witnesses in this case, she questioned them about whether Mr. Rowan was fired for sexual harassment, whether he was accused of sexual harassment. When did Mr. Mahoney or Mr. Markovich learn of sexual harassment? Was the sexual harassment a surprise? There were no questions to anyone about, and what do you do about the racially hostile environment? It was not reported as a racially hostile environment. And the minute that Ford learned of the report, the first report in the record that says she reported to someone that there was a race-based component, that's in her interview with Mr. Harris. And Mr. Rowan was immediately suspended and never returned to work.
So would her comments to the two M fellows count as reporting to Ford if they included racial harassing acts?
I think that's disputed, although it's not really at issue in this appeal. I think there's no date on when she supposedly told anyone about the first racial aspect. The Mounds candy bar comment, which she actually reports in her deposition or in her declaration, she says that he made that comment about the Mounds and she actually didn't perceive it as an offensive statement at first. That happened in late October. So that is not the event that happened in August or even September. So the first time she says that happened is in late October. The events that she says happened in August, the way she describes it is it went from sexual comments towards others. By August, she says there were sexual comments towards her. And then she says that there was a touching in November. There is no, the only timing of any race-based aspect is in late October. And she doesn't say that she reported that aspect specifically to anyone. So
but she does say that she reported everything to Markowitz and, I'm sorry, I'm blanking the other M fellow's name.
Mahoney and Markowitz.
Mahoney, yes.
Again, that statement, again, though, is in the context of what of her reports of sexual misconduct. And again, the first evidence, and this is why I think Judge Drain thought there was an attempt to create a sham. The only evidence that she cited in the district court that she reported any race-based aspect is paragraph 20. And Judge Drain found it significant that that's the only evidence that she cited in support of her race-based claim. We think that the minute she reported it, Ford responded to it. And for that reason, we ask the court to affirm.
The deposition was taken with you asking the questions or your side asking the questions, correct?
I'm sorry, the deposition of Ms. Johnson?
It was Ford who took her deposition, correct?
It was, Your Honor. And again, Ford asked dozens of open-ended questions about her reports on page 1209 through 1211. On page 1273, she was asked, what did you tell Mahoney? On 1215 to 1516 and 1218 to 1219, she was asked what she told Markovich. On page 1236, she was asked what she told Markovich. On page 1219 and 1220 and 1225, she was asked what she told Harris.
Counselor, did you ever ask her if there were any racial statements made?
There are a couple pages of race-based questions, but again, I don't think that's the standard. I think the standard is, what else did you tell him? And if she perceived the race-based harassment to be severe enough to change the conditions of her work, she would have disclosed that. And she didn't. She never said
Give a citation to the pages in the deposition that reference race. If you don't, you can submit it. Oh, you do? Okay. From your question, please.
The only questions on that reference race specifically, as opposed to general open questions that invited her to testify about race, the pages that talk about race are page ID 1230 and 1231. And again, when Ms. Johnson's counsel questioned every witness in this case, never in any of them did she ask about racial harassment. She asked a couple questions about racial comments in the context of sexual comments, but never about an objectively hostile race-based environment. It was always framed as sexual harassment. I also think, just if you permit me one more second, I also think that there's some really fundamental issues here of forfeiture. There were forfeiture of, the district court found forfeiture, found that she failed to cure that in her motion for reconsideration, and she failed to address those things in her opening brief. So the first time there's an argument on any notice, again, is in the reply brief, and it doesn't cite any evidence of reports of race. Her statement about reporting everything, and Judge Strantz, your observation about her saying that the Black Mounds comment was a joke, those are not in her briefing. Those are not evidence that she cited. And I think there's a fundamental principle that the court is not an advocate, and the plaintiff has not overcome her multiple forfeitures that the district court found.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal? You need to take your mute off.
That would help. Thank you. So let me just point out to a few pages in Ms. Johnson's dep transcript that were part of the SJ record and talked about the constant racial harassment. That would be pages 211 to 213, page 257, and page 382. I do want to roll back to Judge Strantz's observation about the open and obvious nature of what was happening. Even Ms. Clemens, who is, you know, overseeing the plant floor from a different floor, she said she knew what was going on. She heard, she's got radios all day listening into the different areas. She said she knew what a horrible work environment Ms. Johnson had. So this was open and obvious. That also goes to notice. And yes, it was a running joke, and it was a horrific one. I want to turn to the issue of forfeiture briefly. So the fact that Ford uses the word forfeit or forfeiture something like two or three dozen times in its brief doesn't make it so. This is an argument they came up with because the law is so bad for them on the pervasive element. The forfeiture case cited by Ford, Bombas, is not remotely similar. It is an action to foreclose a mortgage. In that case, the plaintiff made some vague allegation in her complaint that some of the mortgage documents should be void because they were robo-signed and never provided any legal support, never ever developed that argument to the district court at all. In that case, the court found forfeiture. So a few more points on forfeiture. My complaint from day one alleged severe and pervasive racial harassment that defendant was on notice of and failed to take prompt remedial action. Numerous paragraphs in my complaint say that. Even aside from paragraph 20, which the court struck, I've cited to you her deposition testimony that was in the record. At the SJ hearing, the court said, good job, thorough briefs, everyone. But let me just point to a few more things that came out at that hearing. I argued that the harassment was that she was bombarded with these comments, that there was a myriad of comments. I said, listen, Judge, I can't tell you that there were 62 times that these comments were made because nobody was counting, but it was ongoing and continuous. So these brown mound horrible comments were a daily thing. To argue that somehow when she reported the harassment, she carved out those issues and didn't talk about that aspect, that's just sort of nonsensical. And I pointed out to the judge at the summary judgment hearing that Ford was trying to incorrectly pass this off as just a couple, three racial comments, and instead of the pervasive, constant ones that they really were. Ford barely discussed severe and pervasive in its SJ motion. And just one more point, the real issue here I would submit is that the court needs to get the law right with respect to what constitutes pervasive harassment. The trial court unfortunately did not do that, but this court has the opportunity to correct that.
Thank you both. Thank you both for your argument, and the case will be submitted, and you may disconnect from the video argument.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.